welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi Musings with Adam and Ryan. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, Adam?
Pretty well. It's always a fun time to get together and chat with you about all things superhero and science fiction. And we have a lot of stuff to chat about this week, actually. So let's get right down to it, shall we?
Okay.
Do you have any comic book recommendations this week?
I do. It is actually not.
And it's not mine?
No, it's not. It's not. I'm sorry. I already, used that card.
Yeah.
It's actually I picked this up at a, when I went to a half price, like a discount bookstore. And it was just a little single issue of Superman from 2005.
Oh.
Which actually I'm kind of like curious as to figure out what the heck this OMAC project event was.
Okay.
But I just thought it was like kind of a little neat and spiffy, like kind of one-shot story about Superman disappearing off into South America for couple weeks, and Lois and Jimmy going down to investigate. And I just it was interesting. It actually had a couple of emotional beats in it that almost made me tear up a little bit, because in just the span of however many pages this one issue was, it kind of establishes that during Superman's time down there, he is investigating a drug cartel and kind of befriended a couple of locals in a rural village, and especially, kind of became good friends with a young boy who comes to fear Superman at the end of the issue, because Superman can't be everywhere at once. I thought it was just a neat little spiffy, emotional, sad.
And what was the exact title so people can track it down?
It's just called Superman issue 217.
Okay, so it's one of the regular Superman books.
Yeah, just regular, yeah.
Well, okay, all right. So if you if you go to your comic shop, check the bargain bins, and you might find issue 217 of Superman.
Dated July 2005.
All right, so not too old, about 20, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Not bad.
The art was nice. Yeah,
my math is right on. No, what am I saying? My math is so wrong. Folks,
closer to 15.
Guess what my math grade was. Go ahead. I'll give you three guesses. The first two don't count. How's that math for you? Anyway.
Better than me, okay? I never did well at math in school.
No, neither did I. That's a good recommendation, though. I like that. Good poll.
It's good. Yeah, it's clearly a tie-in to some event that I've never honestly even heard of. Something, like I said, something called OMAC Project. But, though I'm sure that the weird-looking robot that shows up halfway through the issue is tied to that, I just thought it was just a neat, emotional, character-driven, kind of a one-shot in a way.
So Ryan went against the grain of the general premise of the show, which is to cover superheroes and sci-fi not related to DC and Rick.
Well, I need to talk DC somehow. I'm not on the main show often.
It was so good that he had to go against trend. And so that's good, though. It's good. It's a good book, and I hope people check it out. Mm-hmm. All right, my recommendation is very actually, I'm going to do the same thing I accused you of, sort of. Uh-oh. Because I'm going to recommend the Batman Ninja Turtle 2-volume crossover. Each volume is 6 issues. And it's written by James Tynion IV. I don't think he has it.
we have Star Wars on the brain. J.J. Abrams posted a picture.
I don't think he has anything to do with Star Wars, but I bet you he wishes he did. Anyway, James Tynion IV. I wrote this thing, and Freddie Williams II, a lot of again, numbers, math, is the creative team behind this, and it's again, there are two volumes, 60 issues each, and it's a fantastic crossover of two of my favorite properties, Batman and the Ninja Turtles. And you know what? If you think it's crazy and doesn't make sense, shockingly, they find a way to make it make sense. The art's brilliant. There are some emotional beats within both volumes where I, surprise, surprise, got emotional. And that shouldn't be surprising. But I'm not going to go into a mini review because my plan is to review both of those graphic novels, one on Tales from the DC Multiverse, and the second volume on here, or one of the two volumes on here, and one and the other volume on Tales from the DC Multiverse. So it'll be a crossover. A comic book crossover review. How about that?
Who'd have thunk it?
Well, I did. So there you go. So that's my recommendation. Check them out. And the reason why I'm recommending those is because they factor in...
segue!
Yes. They factor into our news items. But we're not going to start with that particular news items because that would make too much sense. We're going to start with the movie that everybody known to man is being cast in, and that's Dune. I hear my cousin's got a role in that. It's Random Space Thug number 4. Or so I've been told. But no, in all seriousness, Dune is a another adaptation of Frank Herbert's science fiction novel about the son of a noble family trying to avenge his father's death while saving a planet that he's entrusted to protect. The film will be directed by Denis Villeneuve.
How do you say that last name? I've never.
Denis Villeneuve of Blade Runner 2049.
And Arrival. Arrival was so good.
Which is the much better of the two movies. I really like Arrival. We'll review it one day on this podcast. Because why not? That's part of the name, sci-fi. And so that's why. And so I really like that movie. And I'll be honest with you, I fell asleep during Blade Runner 2049.
I'm sure Blade, you know, I haven't even seen either of them, to be honest. I'm just not. It's just.
Yeah, gotta be honest, that franchise did nothing for me either.
It just doesn't even excite me enough to want to like seek out the movie. I don't know. It's just me. Personal preferences. Just no.
Yeah. So, but Arrival is the one to figure out. You know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I mean, Dune sounds interesting. It sounds like a sci-fi epic.
Have you seen the original movie?
I did. It's been a while.
But how I saw about the two the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards preferring the miniseries over the movie.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're making, you know, they're doing another one, another movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a lot of who's who in Hollywood here. They've got, so the lead is Timothy Chalamet. I'm not too familiar with him. Just as I said, there's a lot of who's who of Hollywood. I said, I'm not familiar with the lead yet.
Hopefully, the only thing I know Timothy from is, hold on, just before. See, this is editing. This is
perfect. You're gonna check his IMDb, aren't you? To make sure he was in that you were gonna call.
I just want to make sure, yeah. Yeah, the only thing that I know him from is Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Where he co-starred alongside the hopeful.
Should be Batman. Yeah, should be Batman.
The hopeful next Batman? Yep.
Army Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I haven't seen that movie, but I've heard of it. So he's in it. Mm-hmm. But also in it is Oscar Isaac, who played Poe Dameron in the Star Wars franchise and Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse, even though a lot of fans would rather forget that. Not me, but a lot of
fans. X-Men Apocalypse is a good movie.
I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Josh Brolin is in this thing. Javier Bardem, who is somebody in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
And also
Thanos, isn't this? Josh Brolin.
Josh Thanos. And also, I think a certain King of Atlantis also recently just got cast.
Yes, too. Jason Momoa, as of this recording, which will be a week gone by when you hear it, yesterday, Jason Momoa got cast. Rebecca Ferguson from the Mission Impossible franchise in this. MJ Zendaya is in this. And I purposely said MJ because I know it pisses a lot of people off. But I like doing that.
And I like the MJ twist. I knew that was coming from Spider-Man Homecoming
months in advance,
but I still liked it.
And you may ask yourself, is Zendaya part of my multiverse Earth? Why is she one of the multiverse Earth wives? Because I know Steven is asking himself that.
Adam, I know you. Yes, she is.
Well, you took the fun right out of it. but yeah, she is. I won't tell you what Earth she's on. I'll save that for another show. I see.
Do you even know what Earth?
I have an inkling. How about that?
I'm making
the list, but it's too early to check it twice. So that's for save for Christmas. But anyway. So yeah, Jason Momoa is in it, which is the most recent casting. Stellan Skarsgård, which is the guy that ran around naked in the Thor movies. There was one more that I wanted to show. Oh, the former Drax, soon to be probably Bane or King Shark, Dave Bautista.
King Scott, no, please keep it Bane, not King Shark.
I would take either one, actually.
I mean, I would either, but I don't know. I just kind of felt a little let down with Killer Croc and Suicide Squad.
What does Killer Croc have to do with King Shark?
Well, because if they're going to make up instead of doing a CG character.
Yeah, but maybe what I'm saying is, I want James Wan to direct every damn DC thing.
Exactly. After how great Aquaman was. Yes.
But James Gunn may hire some other people to do, the makeup and the visual effects and stuff. So it might not be the same. But anyway, so either one. But yeah, so all these people are in Doom. It's like a who's who of superhero alumni.
Mm-hmm.
I should have screamed that, but I'll get there. I'll have another opportunity, I'm sure.
Oh, trust me. I'm going to have an, alumni, quote-unquote, moment when we get to one of our episode reviews later. So.
Oh, good. I look forward to it. the premise sounds exciting. The miniseries was exciting. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be watching this in theaters.
Of course. With
a cast like that.
I'm not as big. I mean, I like Dune, but I'm far more casual about it than, a lot of other people. My dad is a hardcore Dune fan. He has read every single book written about it.
Yeah, so I'm sure you'll be going with your dad to watch it.
Oh, he's going to probably want to see this, opening night.
And do you know when you and your dad will be seeing this? Can I tell you? Because apparently this news has just been released.
Apparently we won't have to wait too much longer.
No, November 20th, 2020.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's not like 2021 or 2022.
Oh, no, 2021, the Batman's going to be out of range. So. And Warner Brothers doesn't want to, put both Doom and Batman in the same room. Or cannibalize itself, because think about it. They got in 2020. They got this in November. Or actually, sorry. They got February. They got Birds of Prey, and the Fantabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Of one Harley Quinn.
Oh shit! I forgot. My Earth 2 self is gonna get in trouble for forgetting the title of my Earth 2 wives movie. So shame on me. But anyway, yeah, so that Birds of Prey comes out on February 7th. Then Wonder Woman comes out
June something.
June, the beginning of June. And then this in October, in November. So Warner Bros. Is being very smart, strategic and smart about giving all three movies, you know, enough time to make hay.
And won't there, like, be one of those Fantastic Beasts things?
Probably, but who cares?
I don't care.
Just pissed off at Fantastic Beasts because it's holding up the Flash. So screw you, J.K. Rowling. I mean, I like Harry Potter, but screw you, Devin.
Third film is set to be released on November 20th. Wait, what? How's that? Wait, when did you say Dune was being released?
November 20th of 2020.
Why the hell does the wiki say November 20th, 2020 for Fantastic Beasts 3?
Because they haven't accounted for the delay of production, so, yeah.
Maybe.
Yes,
you're right. F those movies because they're holding up the Flash.
Right, exactly. But so we're all excited for Dune and the and all the people in it. So we'll keep you posted on that as it comes about. Now that we've officially talked, because we talked about it off air, me and you, and then we said, you know, we should actually bring this up on the show because, you know, spoiler, it's sci-fi.
We should bring up a lot of the shit that we talk about in the preamble.
Yeah, or just record the preamble, throw an intro in front, and that's the podcast.
That's what I say we should do.
But
it's where I get my DC Marvel talk out.
That's for the Patreon that we don't have yet, but eventually,
soon,
someday, you know, probably before the next Superman movie comes out. But anyway,
Okay, so we have until like 2030 for that. Okay, yeah, we're good.
Pretty much. and if it's the next Superman with Henry Cavill, we may have forever for that. We don't know yet. But moving away from Dune for just a bit, actually for the rest of the show, let's talk about another franchise I'm passionate about. We talked about it on episode one, remember? Masters of the Universe?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
We talked about the writers. They announced the writers. It was the two guys that wrote Iron Man 1 and the upcoming Mission Impossible. I was going to say Mission in Black. Men in Black International.
Mission in Black.
That should be a movie.
A crossover. That would be neat.
Yeah. Paramount can force somebody to not have to shave them.
It's nothing crazier than the proposed Men in Black 21 Jump Street crossover. Which, what the heck?
I mean, you can have Tom Cruise running away from aliens.
I know, which he's already done a couple of times.
AKA his Scientology buddies. But anyway. the writers of Men in Black International, we said that we're boarding the, or had boarded the Masters of the Universe reboot film. But now, we've gotten one step closer to filming, Ryan. You know why?
Why?
Because Masters of the Universe has a production start date, an end date, actually. According to Omega Underground, which is, you know, sort of the source for all this. Omega Underground is where I read it, via Production Weekly. So the industry, you know, paper that reports all this stuff. They say that Masters of the Universe will be filming from July 15th, 2019, until October 18th of 2019.
Now Adam, I was going to ask you, how often do you do fan casting for stuff?
Because
I was going to ask you, so who do you think should play He-Man and Skeletor?
I got two ideas.
Okay.
For He-Man. Not because I do this often, but because it just came to my mind. Okay, so if Armie Hammer doesn't get Batman, cast him as He-Man. Because literally, he's got to look for He-Man, I think. Another choice I'd have for He-Man is also because one Hemsworth brother is taken, why not Liam Hemsworth?
I'd be down with that.
And a third choice I have, because I have three, Have you seen Creed 2?
No, I have not, but are you talking about...
I'm talking about...
Drago's son?
That's right, and why would that
so,
be
so? So you're so... So, the original He-Man's son.
Yeah. Come on, you're telling me that somebody in the room at Sony, in the meetings, hasn't thought of that? You know they have. Come on.
Sony ever so briefly considered an Aunt May movie. I'm sure that they've thought about
that. Yeah, and that was a terrible idea. My idea is actually good. At least I think it is. So yeah, I'm excited about. By the way, they're going to film in Prague. I've never been to Prague, but I'm hoping that it has some sort of, you know, various old school castles that they can double as Castle Grayskull.
Now, what about Skeletor? Got any ideas for that one?
Yeah. Okay. Well. That's a tough cast, I think, because Frank Langella did a perfect job. Can we bring Frank Langella back?
The clips that I've seen of Langella from the original movie, he's being no different than the original cartoon. So I was like okay with it.
Okay, here's an option, and tell me what you think of this, because he's going to be in prosthetic probably. Some sort of prosthetic makeup or CGI or what have you, right?
Uh-huh.
Hear me out here now. Mark Strong. Come on, going from Sinestro to Dr. Savannah to Skeletor? I mean, that's just...
Actually, I'd be fine with that, yeah.
That's just a trifecta of villainy that...
Lords.
Like,
oh,
okay. Like if we add a fourth villain... That would be like the Mount Rushmore of villainy.
I just feel bad for Mark Strong. He keeps getting cast as villains, which is why when I saw the first Kingsman, when I saw that in theaters, I was full on expecting him to turn on everybody and betray them, because I'm just like, it's Mark Strong. He's a bad guy.
But he's such a great bad guy.
I know. And I was actually a little disappointed. I was like, I thought he was going to turn. Wait, Mark Strong's actually a good guy in this movie? Holy crap. That's a twist.
And the more I think about it, that suggestion that I just thought of, literally off the top of my head, like first thing that came to my head, it actually sounds really good, because I can imagine him in the prosthetics.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I want this now. I got to get in touch with the directors and have a chat with these people.
You know, kind of just, you know... take a look at what Marvel did for Red Skull and just, like, we'll do this, but better.
But not red.
Not red. Not red, yes.
With some purple hues, you know, in the outfit. You know, purple and blue or whatever the hell.
Yeah. And then he has to get that really, really, really weird shiny armor that Angela wore in the last movie.
Well, I mean, you haven't watched the movie yet. We have to remedy
that. I've only seen clips. All my knowledge and quote-unquote viewing of the original movie was from watching like someone on YouTube do a review of it. And I was like, this isn't as bad as I was expecting, but...
Well, we'll have to, during the hiatus of Roswell and the recently renewed, Project Blue Book.
Come on, CW, renew Roswell, please.
Yeah, we will have to... get you to review.
Hey, I'd be fine with that.
Masters in Music. Mm-hmm. But so that seems like it's going, and okay, with
that's good.
With the production dates, you know, approaching, I can't imagine that casting would be far behind. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. Another franchise that is near and dear to my heart. Well, two is getting something special. Remember how I mentioned that my comic book recommendation was Batman and the Ninja Turtles?
Yes, sir.
Well, I recommended that for two reasons, because they've just announced that in May they will be releasing the third part of the comic book trilogy. Once again, written by James Tynion IV, and once again drawn by Freddie Williams II, but assisting Freddie Williams II is none other than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle co-creator Kevin Eastman. And so part three is going to have Krang as one of the villains. And Batman going up against Krang will be very interesting. And so I can't wait for this. But earlier last week, it was announced that this spring, Ryan, we are getting one of those DC Direct to Blu-ray and home entertainment movies that you refuse to watch for some unknown pretentious reason of yours.
Ouch!
We're getting one of those, and it's Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it's gonna borrow from the graphic novels.
It's weird of a concept that I guess I actually need to go out and read these comics. I'm like, how do they make this work? Well, how do they make it work two times? How are they making it work three times? First, how are they making it work to the point where they're going to do an animated movie off of it?
First of all, whether you like it or not, I just told you we're doing a crossover review. So you're going to have to read them regardless. That's number one. And number two, I hate to break it.
Look how demanding he is, people. I'm kidding.
I hate to break it to you, but you're watching that movie whether you like it or not.
I think I'm fine watching the out of continuity ones.
I'm gonna email your brother. I don't have his email, but I'll find it. much like Liam Neeson in those Taken movies, I'll find it.
I will hunt you down. I will find you.
Right, and because he's a big turtle fan, and I'll make him make you watch it. And so there you go. Get ready for that, whether you like it or not.
If he's not tired from taking care of his daughter, you know, then yes.
Well, you can help with your niece, and you can read her the graphic novels. That would be good.
I do want to get her into the DC superhero, you know, the DC superhero girls or something, whatever.
Yeah, but what a great bedtime story. Batman versus and the Ninja Turtles. I mean, who could ask for it? Oh, screw, listen. Screw Frozen, screw Little Mermaid and all that jazz.
No, you crossed the line with me. Do not go after Little Mermaid.
Whatever. Lion King, Aladdin, all that garbage.
I quit.
When you want to read your kid a bedtime story, boy or girl, Kryptonian or Thanagarian, whatever they are, the best bedtime stories are the Batman Ninja Turtle crossovers. You heard it here first. Parents, if you want to be good parents, take that to heart. And, you know, my weekly parenting advice will continue. We'll have a segment each week where I tell you how you should parent your kid with superhero and sci-fi materials.
good God.
And Deadpool will not be on that list. But, or maybe it should. Well, no, who knows?
Definitely should.
Toughen up the kids nowadays.
Because Deadpool 2 was a family movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, they're doing the animated series, or the animated movie. I wish it was a series. Troy Baker is going to voice Batman and the Joker, if you can believe it. And he did the voice, if you remember.
I really liked his performance. You know, I know Baker as the Joker from Arkham Origins. I thought he was pretty great in that.
Yeah.
So...
wasn't he Batman in that too? I think he was both.
No. Hold on. Oh my God. We are never prepared, people.
You're going to the internet again, aren't you?
I'm currently on IMDb, yes.
We here at
are incredibly prepared.
Are sponsored by IMDb. You should be. Because of all the shout-outs we give.
I can't. I'm going to look it up. Oh, shit.
We're going to start a drinking game. How many times Ryan looks at IMDb?
Shut up.
do we have a verdict? Because this is...
He has one hell of a credits list. Holy crap. Hold on.
You could have just typed in Batman.
No, he's only listed as the Joker. So,
I don't know who in the hell played Batman in that game.
I'm looking it up. I'm looking.
Troy Baker is playing Batman in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And good for him. And the Joker. So he's got double duty. I wonder if that affects his pay. Oh, and you know who's playing Harley Quinn and Batgirl?
Who?
One of my multiverse wives, Tara Strong.
Good. The OG.
She's great. She's phenomenal. You know, screw my multiverse, my multiverse selves from those respective Earths. I should get one of those devices on the Flash show and breach the both universes and take Margot Robbie and Tara Strong out to dinner. Doesn't that sound fantastic? That was for me.
Only you, Adam. Only you.
Well, you're looking at IMDb. I can fantasize while you're doing that.
And Roger Craig Smith was Batman in Arkham.
Oh, what the hell? Who knows? It should have been, Troy Baker. No, I'm kidding. He did a fantastic job. The guy with three names did a fantastic job.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
They all did fantastic jobs being younger Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this movie. I'm excited for this movie. If I could have told myself, my younger self, in 1990 that this was going to happen one day, I would have been giddy as I am now. So, yeah, I'll be on the lookout for that.
Just too bad it's not Ben Affleck Batman.
And stop that. Listen, cut the cord. It's over. And like I metaphorically tweeted to a certain somebody who is no longer associated with this podcast. He's gone. It's official. Deal with it. And most importantly, suck it up, Buttercup. All right, moving on from Ben Affleck and Batman and Ninja Turtles, which apparently we're both excited for.
Very, yes.
We have more animation to talk about, right? It's an animated mm-hmm. kind of affair this week.
Mm-hmm.
Our mutual shared franchise, the Transformers franchise.
Yes.
Don't make me say suck it up, Buttercup, to you too.
You're going to have to with this one.
Well, get ready, because Transformers is going to Netflix. It's a new animated series. Let me get this straight here. I got the information up here. So, I had the information. Oh, here it is. Okay. Yeah. So, essentially, it's like an origin kind of story. But specifically, it's going to take place on Cybertron. In fact, it's called War of Cybertron, or War for Cybertron. It's going to premiere on Netflix in 2020. And digital studio Rooster Teeth, I never heard of them, will produce the series with Polygon Pictures, who do... the Star Wars Resistance animated series. They say it's going to be something for new fans and existing fans, and that they're going to use a new, never-before-seen style of animation for the Transformers franchise. I've often said I want more Cybertron. You've heard me say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not making that up. I'm super excited for this. And it's set in, again, it's going to premiere in 2020. So we got about a year or just under a year to wait, depending on how you look at it. But I'm stoked. With the addition of Mark Millar's comics and comic adaptations, with the addition of soon-to-be Lucifer, thank you, Netflix, and now this, the Netflix subscription just became worth it. So I'm excited for this. What are your thoughts, Ryan?
Judging on the simple fact of the name choice that they're using and how Hasbro, when it comes to their animated shows, Transformers-wise, they love to tie it into the whatever the current toy line is.
Oh, yeah.
Just like how Machinima did Combiner Wars.
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good feeling that this is just going to be another. Oh, look, G1 Optimus. Shocker.
Okay, now let me put it to you this way. Did they not have the video game?
Yes, and I actually wish that the War for Cybertron toy line was video game inspired instead of being, oh look, G1 again for the eighth year in a row.
But how do we know they're not going to borrow some of that? We don't.
I'm sorry, I've just been burned on Transformers lately, so maybe I am being a little pessimistic. I will do my best to reserve judgment for a trailer. I will watch the first episode and give it a fair shot. I will.
Yeah, because we'll be reviewing that, of course. So I
will. But I'm just, I don't know. Just like I said, just with what Paramount and Hasbro did concerning, you know, my favorite iteration of Cybertronians and the most recent movie, I'm honestly just burned out of. But I am willing to try and be more open-minded, and I'll see what. I'm not that optimistic, but I would love more than anything to be pleasantly surprised and be proven wrong. I really would. I genuinely mean that.
Well, listen, you softened on Bumblebee a little bit.
It took me 2 months, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm still gonna give that movie an almost failing score whenever we get to it, and it's. I am, like you said, I am softening on.
And that's a good segue, mm-hmm. because we will be reviewing Bumblebee as we originally promised, mm-hmm. but we're gonna do it when it comes out on home media, which is April 2nd, according to my sources, which is nothing more than an official release. So. We will be getting to Bumblebee in due time, and maybe when Ryan watches it the second time, he'll soften even
if
more.
If I watch it the second time. Okay. Yeah. Maybe. We'll see. You're more optimistic than me.
I heard that, and you watched it. We all have to do things that we don't want to. I put up with a podcast host for a year that started grating on me after 6 months. And I still managed to make it work. So you can watch this movie a second time.
I did watch it once.
I said
enough.
A second time.
Oh, God.
Just think of how cute baby Bumblebee was. That'll get you through it.
Bumblebee was precious.
Yeah, well, like, there you go. There's always something to look forward to. Batman and Robin has something to look forward to. The end. See?
Oh, my God. What, not right. Bane? But you don't like Bane in Batman and Robin?
Look, I don't like much of anything in that movie. The only good thing in that thing was the Alfred scene where he's sick. And they have that touch. No, not because he's sick.
Oh.
But because there's
I thought it'd be like a sarcastic douche.
I love Alfred. I don't want him to get sick.
I know.
But what I'm saying is that scene actually had acting in it. You know, the one with him and Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Then he had to cancel the pizzas and everything went downhill. Anyway, all right, so we are going to review Bumblebee. Transformers as an animated movie, or animated series, which we'll be talking about. That's the news.
The last thing I have to say on the Transformers thing. Look, I'm optimistic in my thoughts that it's not going to be for me. I just really hope, because I like to kind of think of myself as one of those people that's like, even if something...
Open-minded?
It's not that. It's even if something doesn't work for me, I hope it works for others. Like, even I've said that, you know, I believe I said that on the podcast. I know I say that on, like, Twitter and whatnot. That's like, okay, I did not like Bumblebee. I strongly disliked the Bumblebee movie. But I do hope like the people that did enjoy it, that it did work for, I am beyond thrilled. I am excited and happy for you that you have something that you enjoy, because I know I wouldn't want someone to take away what I enjoy. I just hope that this series, the upcoming stuff on Netflix, isn't a retread of the Machinima Combiner Wars shows, because my God, those were awful.
Well, I think Netflix would want something that's more.
Yeah, don't do something that's like only 5 minutes an episode, crappy animation, storylines that are illogical and make no sense. You know, if you're going to do a prequel show,
I'm pretty sure with Netflix and the money that they got, it'll be a full-blown animated
series. Even if the seasons aren't long, 8-10 episodes or something, whatever.
Well, I think they'll probably do 13 if I had to guess. So 10 to 13 is typically Netflix's style.
Yeah.
So
I just don't, cuz I have seen the Combiner War stuff, and when they try to just know that those shows were crap.
All right, let's take bets.
Yeah.
Is Peter Cullen going to reprise? He has to, right?
If it's going to be a prequel, I honestly don't. I love Cullen. Don't get me wrong. He's like the one freaking constant in this whole franchise. But it's like if...
I think if you have Optimus, you have to have him.
I don't necessarily agree.
Like, until he's not on this
one. If it's going to be a prequel, I would honestly much rather prefer be someone. And this is going to sound.
Oh, then see. So
weird.
You're going to be okay with that. But then literally every human being on the planet is going to be like, what are you guys doing? It's like, it's not Peter Cullen?
Yeah, because we're doing a younger Optimus.
I'm of the opinion that as long as he is on this mortal plane, he has to voice Optimus Prime.
I mean, if he does it, it's not going to be like, oh, look, it's Peter Cullen doing Optimus. He's never going to phone that in. I know that. It's just, if it's going to be a prequel, like an actual true prequel, doesn't matter what freaking continuity, a true prequel, just, I don't know. I would try and get someone younger, but I don't know.
My bet is that he's there.
I would not be surprised, not one bit.
But all right,
I'm willing to bet against my own personal opinion.
Okay.
That obviously.
So it's not much of a bet.
No.
Because we're both saying the same thing.
Yeah, it's, you know.
All right. Well, we'll keep the audience posted as to when we know more of this, more information of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get on with our reviews for Project Blue Book and Roswell, New Mexico, shall we?
Sure.
All right, so Project Blue Book this week, or this past what was it about and what was the case?
Okay, this case is probably, I've heard of cases similar to this one where, you know, throughout the 50s, 60s, even into the 70s, you know, alleged UFO sightings and aircrafts of unknown origin interfered with some testing sites and set off alarms at nuclear testing sites. This particular episode, reading off the IMDb, which really we should just get sponsored by IMDb at this point. I would be fine. Give me your money. After mysterious green fireballs nearly cause a nuclear disaster during a weapons test, Hynek and Quinn investigate how it could have occurred, while at the same time, it seems like our Russian spies are getting a little bit closer to uncovering the truth about what Hynek is investigating.
Yeah. I really like the nuclear test base kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting for someone if that bomb went off, I was waiting for someone to get into a fridge.
Yeah, no, but I was just going to say that. It reminded me of Kingdom of the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And not many people like that movie.
I love that movie.
I enjoy it, too.
I do. A radio to God is, you know, more plausible than aliens, really, people, really.
Yeah.
Really.
The fact that sort of the aliens, if you will, contributed mm-hmm. to the countdown going off, and you know those mm-hmm. those two soldiers were kind of, you know, crapping themselves. Yeah, but like
I would have put in my 2 weeks' notice the second I got back to the base.
Oh yeah, like he's kissing the ground, and I'm like, you damn right, you're kissing the ground. And because they weren't main characters, there was a sense of, oh crap, these guys are gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
I literally had a moment where I'm like, oh, it ain't gonna end well for these two guys. So that was kind of interesting. And then what I liked about, you know, this episode was you start to see Hynek. He's publicly defying now his superiors.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he goes behind Damien Dark's back, and that's what I'm going to call him because I forgot what his name of the show is.
He's General Dark. He's just General Dark. Yeah. General Damien Dark.
to get his project funded from the higher ups.
Uh-huh.
And Damien Dark isn't happy about that.
And like, I love how Neil McDonough's character is so mad at Hynek for cooperating with, I believe it's supposed to be, the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
So someone who's above, well above what General Dark, you know, yet he's, you know, mad that Hynek is listening to his superior.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, it was kind of funny. But even like not only, you mentioned our Russian spies on the home front are getting closer to what Hynek is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out there's a spy at the nuclear testing site, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
That was surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't trigger to me when we first saw him in the episode. Like, I didn't.
Although I get the feeling, like, okay, our two Russian spies, you know, they're obviously working on, you know, behalf of,
yeah, you know,
the Russian government. Yes, the guy at the test site, I got more of a just, not that he's a spy, but that he, Senator McCarthy would have a field day with him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
not that he's a spy, but that he actively wants to promote communism.
Yeah,
and all that goodness.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's going on at the home front with Mimi and I'm not sure what her name
Susie?
Is.
Susie?
Yeah, the blonde. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, Susie.
So, she's sort of feeding into, because Mimi notes that Hynek is acting weird. You know, he's starting to get obsessive about his work, spending all that time in his office. He's, mm-hmm. he's more withdrawn.
And also the fact that he's, like, spending so much time away from the family. It's...
Yeah.
We're starting to actually see it take a toll on their personal lives.
As you'd imagine something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when Susie, you know, picks up on her tension, she plays on that fact. And, you know, they sort of, I guess you can call it, breaking into Hynek's office. And she gets a hold of his journal. And she reads through it. So she now has a sense of, you know, the stuff he's going through. And in his journal, she sees the entry about the guy who burned himself to death last week. And that really hits home for me that, okay, yes, I'm concerned, but now kind of seeing what he's going through kind of changes her perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was well played. I thought that whole arc and the way it all came together when he got home, I thought it was very authentic and it didn't feel forced or rushed or anything like that. But before we can talk about that ending, we got to go back to the army base because Hynek meets up with one of the quote-unquote Men in Black types, right?
Yep, we finally get to meet, you know, the shadow guy, the one that's been following him along.
And the shadow knows, so... Mm-hmm.
And remember my alumni comment?
Yeah.
If I am wrong, please, Twitter, internet, whatever, correct me. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the guy who plays the quote-unquote Man in Black is the drunk truck driver from Man of Steel that tries to push and start a fight with Clark.
Ooh, yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
So could be wrong.
What you're saying is it's a Man of Steel alum.
Man of Steel alum, yes.
I can't do it the way he did. He used to. But that's because I'm not ridiculous. But what did you think? Like, give us a breakdown of your thoughts on what he was telling Hynek and all that stuff. I want to get your like, what's going on there with it? Because he's kind of hinting that, almost as if Hynek's been preordained to
become a believer and to become
yeah.
I mean, it's definitely foreshadowing because, like I said, when we reviewed the first two episodes, when we first started talking about the show, the real life, Dr. Hynek, he started off working in Project Blue Book as, you know, probably one of the biggest skeptics, you know, living in America at the time. But by the time he was finished with, you know, working with the government and all these investigations, Project Blue Book made him a believer. Even though the majority of the reports in Blue Book, you know, they pass off as, you know, aircraft or natural phenomenon or what have you.
Yeah.
But yet, one of its lead investigators came away a diehard believer that, yes, we are not alone. And yes, we have been visited many, many times. So like I said, I kind of just viewed that as clearly, you know, someone is trying to push, you know, show Hynek the truth for sure by giving him that key-looking thing, whatever the heck that is. To me, it looked like a key of some kind.
Definitely alien in origin, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was interesting because I'm like, what in God's name is that?
Exactly. And I was wondering, like, was it actually glowing or is it just the way the lights around the set were, like, illuminating it?
That is a good question.
Uh-huh. It's just... What the F is this thing?
Yeah, I'm like, is that an alien corkscrew? What is that? But again, like now he's got a bona fide artifact.
Uh-huh. And I love that he's now being completely open with Mimi. He's actually just outright showing her this is what I have. You know, he shows her this. Until I know otherwise, I'm gonna refer to it as the key. Because you can take that literally or metaphorically.
Not the octagonal Smallville key.
No.
The one in the key.
And not Clark's command key from Man of Steel. No, not that either.
Oh, okay.
But some kind of key. It will be either a key that unlocks something, or it'll be key to the investigation. It's a key of some kind.
Indeed.
Almost made me hope. I kind of had wished that the episode, because at one point in the episode, Susie is able to persuade Mimi to show her Hynek's office, And it looks like they had made a the Russian spies had made a copy of Hynek's key for his like little safe where he keeps papers and photos and his journal. So they obviously had made a key, and Susie acts as if
she found
the key. I had almost, not almost, I actually did wish, and I watched this with my father, this episode with my dad, and he agreed with me, that the episode, like, they should have ended it with Mimi going, you know, I looked around your office and behind, you know, such and such, you know, thing, I found a key and I looked and I read your journal. And I, this is me if I was writing the show, so this is why I'm not writing the show. You know, that's when I would have Hynek say, that's not where I hide the key.
Or better yet, what key?
What key? Exactly. Something.
Yeah, no, but my question is, it's great that he told her and they're open and the truth is out there.
But I wonder if she's going to tell him what she's doing with, you know, what she's been doing with Susie.
But not only that, doesn't telling her put her in danger?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, definitely.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I hope nothing happens to her.
I hope not, too.
I kind of like that actress.
Exactly. She does a fantastic job.
She should be Lois Lane in, like, if they ever do a 50s Superman movie.
Mm-hmm.
She should be Lois Lane.
Ooh, good.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how she starts to factor into all this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I thought it was a good episode. A really good episode.
It's very good. Very good.
So I
do not think that there has been a single bad episode from the show so far.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And just now with the addition of this key and this physical artifact that's alien in origin, things have only ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that, you know, with all those niceties being said there about how good the show is.
You're gonna make me rate this, aren't you?
Of course I am. So what is your rating?
I would probably have to give this... You know, I'll be generous. I'll give it a 9 out of 10 because we are, you know, we're moving the plot along at a very rapid pace. The Russians, you know, our two Russian spy neighbors are getting incredibly close. And they also...
So you could argue the Russians are coming.
The Russians are coming. They've already murdered the one neighbor. The one bitch of a neighbor.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She is one of them.
I mean, she was a bitch, but did she deserve to die? I would not go that far, but it's like, damn. I love that Hynek.
You replay yourself.
I love that Hynek has finally met the man in black. Now let's hopefully the man in black doesn't, you know, try to go to Alaska, get drunk, and start a fight with Superman.
But where is Will Smith in all this?
Wait, what?
Where is Will Smith in all this?
And what is that key? It's just, I just want answers. I'm an impatient person. I want the answers. What is all this?
Well, let's hope we get some.
Yes.
But so 9 out of 10 for you. And
yes, sir.
Since you went numerical, I'll echo that sentiment and go numerical with you. And I'll also give it a 9 out of 10. So that's our take on this week, this episode of Project Blue Book. Now we move forward in time to Roswell, New Mexico. Give us the lowdown on what happened this week, Ryan.
Well, this episode had a hell of a lot of twists.
Yeah.
A series of mysterious blackouts cause Isabel to kind of spiral out of control and almost completely vanish, while Kyle and Alex, you know, discover that not only, you know, did they have, you know, the shared love and respect of Kyle's dad, you know, former Sheriff Jim Valenti, but you know, they uncover while out at Valenti's like little hunting lodge that the whole Rosa secret sure as hell ain't what we thought it was. It almost makes me feel dirty that I even that we
well, they told us to think about it that way.
I know they that's how they led us to think.
It's not like we're a bunch of perverts.
Which, you know, obviously we're going into this with spoilers. You know, we're not, if you're listening to this, spoilers.
You should have watched Roswell.
Got you. Damn. Watch Roswell. Because, no, Project Blue Book got renewed. Watch Roswell so that CW renews the show. Yeah. Damn it.
But, and if CW doesn't renew the show, why not? You review everything else.
Exactly.
Or renew everything
else. Shows that I love and Adam doesn't like. So come on, CW, get on it. Legends.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Rosa is Kyle's half brother because Jim Valenti did not have an affair with Rosa. He had an affair with Liz and Rosa's mom.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that.
I was not either. On this is so weird. When Kyle and Alex were in that weird little bunker, which I swear the first time we saw it, I swear to God, I thought it was like a weird little 50 Shades of Grey sex dungeon.
Yeah.
For just a split second, I thought that.
Not but that the I've second watched 50 Shades of Grey, but yeah.
I mean, yeah. Well, neither have I, but we all know it's a.
Yeah, I mean it's glorified porn.
It glorified porn and fan fiction, but the second that you know Kyle and Alex opened up that little like Foot Locker and saw the picture.
Yeah.
I had a similar reaction. I forgot like the dialogue or the moments that led me to think this, but I remember when I watched Krypton, the first season of the Krypton show, and like a full minute before it was like just outright blatantly revealed to us that General Zod was
Superman's uncle.
Superman's uncle. I'm forgetting the grandfather's name. Oh my God.
Segel.
Thank you. Wow. For a show that I loved and adored completely, I feel bad. Segel and
for Mister, I gotta talk about DC every chance I get. Can't remember Segel's name. Jeez.
Adam, you're lucky that it would cost me a lot of money to get up to see you right now. Segel and Lita Zod's daughter, you know, where it just was like, oh my God, no, they didn't, you know, kind of stuff like that. Oh, wow, I wonder how Liz is going to take this.
Well, that's going to be an interesting thing. The reaction there. But you know what I liked about that whole experience? I mean, the reveal was cool. But the relationship between, or the talking, you know, the quote unquote talk it out moments between,
Kyle and Alex.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Because we learned that they were ex-BFFs. They were best friends growing up, and then when they entered high school, and when Alex was coming to terms with who he was and his orientation and all that, you know, Kyle
moved away from
being a dumbass teenager, you know, back in, this would have been what? 90s? Not the 90s. This is, they're kind of like, I would say they're almost like my age, so this would be like 2005, 2006, time. You know, no homo. I don't know this guy, you know, oh, he's gay, you know, start, you know, bullying him and all that stuff for.
Yeah, and what I liked about these moments was that it didn't glorify the way Kyle used to act at all towards him. Kyle understood that, you know, I was an idiot.
Kyle feels genuinely awful that he treated Alex this way.
Yeah, and it's an apology and an acknowledgement that, look, when I was a kid, I was an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm an adult and I understand that, you know, you're one of the bravest, kindest person I know.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that, yeah, you know, in the context of the show, it's great, but also in the context of our real world, it's great too, because you can kind of understand when younger kids / teenagers are morons and feel this way. But if you're an adult that feels this way, there's something wrong with you.
Like, you know, I'm like, I know people, you know, very close to me that, like, one of his best friends right now, is someone who used to bully him in high school. And yet years later, they made amends. That, you know, the guy was like, I you know, I'm so sorry that I ever did all this stuff to you and all that. But, you know, and I've had this happen. You know, I remember, like, elementary school, you know, being close with friends and growing up through all the grades and whatnot. And then when high school hits, and when I was starting to be more open with who I am, with and with my close circle of friends, and when they caught on that I was gay, you know, they started to treat me differently and started to treat me like shit. Unfortunately, you know, there wasn't really a Kyle-like situation where they came back years later and apologized. But, you know, I've been there. I've been in Alex's shoes where someone you thought was a best friend turns on you when they learn that you're gay. Just only because they do not want that association.
So it was true. It was true to life. But I think,
yeah,
Kyle's, you know, growth and repentance is something I think that a lot of people could look to and learn from. I think it's important that the show went there and dealt with that.
Exactly. And I love that, because they could have easily played it off as Kyle not knowing, you know, what he did was so wrong. You know, and I'm glad that they went the route of Kyle is fully aware that he was a prick.
And the other surprise too, the other going back to the shock of it all, the surprise, was when Alex finds the piece of the ship, I guess it is.
You know, Valenti had a piece of the 47 ship. Michael has a piece. It's
kind of like Oprah. Yeah. Soon we're gonna discover. You have a piece.
Everyone has a piece.
It's like the Dune casting. Everybody's in the movie.
And you're casting Dune. And you're casting Dune.
But speaking of Rosa. She comes into contact through her investigation with that alien conspiracy theorist, radio host, the podcast host. And discovers that...
Oh, you mean Liz?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Liz. Yeah, because Rosa's dead. She can't come.
Yeah.
Unless this is the Sixth Sense. But
although the alien conspiracy guy,
the Sixth Sense Trevor, from the first conversation with dead people to the last. No, I'm kidding.
You know, the alien, you know, the conspiracy guy, he knew something about Rosa's death. He witnessed it.
Yeah, like he witnessed the moment. The moment. And so, you know, they meet up, and then instantly they're thrust into a situation. We're just knowing that fact and being in possession of such a video puts them in danger, like they're attacked. And their life is threatened.
And through this video, we learn that, you know, clearly it was the whole car accident, drunk driving car, that was staged.
That was staged
because this video that the conspiracy guy shows Liz has Rosa and the two other girls floating in the air in the desert.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to what all that is.
But, you know, it's cool. I thought that, you know, because you have the alien conspiracy guy is shot in the head and killed.
Mm-hmm. And this is after we actually learn that he is not...
He's not just a conspiracy theorist podcaster.
He is being paid to spread disinformation.
Yeah. Well, he's being sponsored by IMDb, like we should be. but yeah, no, he's being paid to spread disinformation.
Yes.
But he's shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And Liz is almost burned alive. If not for Max arriving on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, she frees herself.
Yes. Liz ain't no damsel in distress.
No.
Liz, kind of, in a weird way, to bring it back to Smallville, just to make you happy. Liz kind of reminds me of Lois, where, okay, they can get conked out and, like, tied up, but they're able to free themselves and kick some ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Like I said, they ain't no damsel in distress.
And that's a good pull, by the way. That's a good call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, but Max arrives at the scene, and it calms Liz down, and mm-hmm. they end up going back to, I guess it's his place, I think.
Yeah.
And so they start talking, and they have their lovey-dovey moment, mm-hmm. which is, again, interrupted by her wanting to know the truth.
And Max finally
Max is like, I really want to be with this woman, so screw it, I'm going to tell her the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her that it wasn't him.
Max has been covering up, but it's not because he is the one that killed.
Yeah, Max didn't kill Rosa. Michael didn't kill Rosa.
It was Isabel.
And that was a shock and a half. I didn't see that coming. At all.
Oh, hell yeah.
At all. And the even more interesting part is based on, because Michael is having a conversation with Isabel.
Uh-huh.
And Michael's saying, look, you know who killed Rosa and those girls.
Mm-hmm.
You just blocked yourself from
the memory. And this is after, Max and Michael find Isabel. And we learn that throughout their lives, in times of extreme stress, Isabel has these blackouts where she just wanders off, disappears, can't be found for like a day or two. And they kind of, they keep talking about throughout the episode that, this is the first time she's done it in 10 years. And that the last time she had one of these, blackouts was towards the end of school and all, towards the end of a senior year in high school.
When the incident happened.
Yeah. Which you don't put two and two together that. No. The last time Isabel had a blackout was, like around the time that, was like the night of Rosa's death.
Yeah. But the cool thing is, so she doesn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly I'm choosing to believe that it was accidental. Like something happened.
I don't know.
At least I hope it's accidental.
Yeah, because, I love these characters. I love Isabel.
Yeah.
I love Michael. I love Matt. I don't want to believe that these guys do anything wrong. They're the good guys here. We have bad aliens coming.
So, the amount of twists and turns in this episode.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. I might go out on a limb. So this is my preamble to kind of end the review. This might be the best episode to date so far, in my opinion.
It was the only episode without a Michael and Alex moment, so it might be a little bit lower on my list than you.
Well, fair enough, but in terms of moving the story forward and content-wise,
aside from my joking comment,
the mushy kiss stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So I loved it. I'm gonna go ahead and give my rating first, so that you can stew over it for a second.
Okay.
But I'm gonna keep consistent with your numbering because you went off grid today, and went number wise.
I'm gonna be going off the grid all the time.
Yeah. So that's cool.
to the point where staying on grid is going to be off the grid.
One week it'll be numbers. One week it'll be letters.
One week I'm gonna rate it out of like what kind of pizza flavors I like or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And nothing beats the review I gave Justice League, which was 7.5 Henry Cavill porn mustaches out of 10. That will go down. That will go down in infamy as the best rating I've ever given in terms of a quantifier. But I'm going to go ahead and give this a 10 out of 10. I loved it.
Wow, okay. I
really loved it.
Is this your first 10 out of 10 for the whole show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to...
Well, you're going to be the Debbie Downer no matter what, because you can't go higher.
No.
By default.
Only because I'm doing 9 out of 10. Yeah. Like I said, you know, I'm a hardcore... Twitter has officially called it Malix, Michael and Alex Malix.
Christ almighty, this shipping.
Oh, crap. God. from the first alien human kiss to the last. Malix forever.
Christ almighty.
Welcome. Welcome, Adam. Welcome to your new nightmare.
I'm having nightmares. I want to black out like Isabel.
When Michael and Alex break up, they're never going to stay broken up. They're going to come back together for.
Oh, yeah, in issue 50. In episode 50, it's going to happen.
Michael's going to run away from the altar for Alex. I'm like, no, it's going to be another 50 episodes. Then they get back together.
Yeah. And they're going to call themselves by their shit name.
Like, Malix.
Yeah.
They're going to be blasting away, you know, aliens and the army and out in the desert. Snookums, I love you so much.
Listen, folks, I get behind relationships. Like, I enjoy certain couples getting together. But this shipping thing, I find it absolutely... And not you do it. Like, I like that you enjoy that couple. But this whole shipping thing is ridiculous. Like, there's a YouTube channel, The Shipper's Guide to the Universe. Are you kidding me?
Are you serious? There is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to look this up after this.
Christ, somebody stop it.
Just so I can see how ridiculous this is.
Listen, the only ships I like is when Amazon ships me a package. The Death Star, because it's cool. And that's not even a ship, I don't think.
How about the ship of Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy? Do you like that one?
Well, I like the two of them together, but the shipping them, the idea of combining the names, I think is ridiculous.
It's always so freaking difficult to do it.
By all means, put Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn together. The more I think about it, the more I like it. Go for it.
Sometimes the names make sense and they're cute. They're stupid, but they're cute. Then there's like, I've actually seen also on Twitter, the people that do Malix for Michael and Alex are going Echo for Max and Liz. Where the hell did that come from?
What did they call it?
Echo. I think it might be a reference back to the first or second episode where they talk about, you know, the psychic link after Max healed Liz. As like Liz is feeling Evans, echoes. Evans, echoes.
Oh, okay.
I was going the maybe.
Evans and or Max Evans. Yeah.
Oh, that's, I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking like, you know,
oh, that's just, like, but that's just plain stupid. Look, folks, back to my original.
We ain't talking about Alicity, okay?
I think that's the biggest offender of them all. But no.
Folks, I like Alicity, by the way. But
that's... Stop that garbage. It's Oliver and Oliver and Dinah Lance.
I wanted Oliver and Laurel first.
I've never seen television force anything down a viewer's throats more than that Alicity bullshit. But back to my point, there's only a few ships I like. It's when Amazon ships me a package or the USS Enterprise on Star Trek. How about that? All right? That's the only ships I want to hear about this on this show. By the way, Amazon, I'm waiting for a couple of shipments, so get on that stuff. But yeah, shipping is ridiculous. And... So he gives it a 9 out of 10.
An, an, a 9 echoes out of 10. I know you've missed dealing with this, so I just have to give it to you in little doses. So
you're really asking for it tonight. But
I'm on a roll. I've had a good week.
Yeah. But before he gets even crazier with this crap, that's going to be the end of the show.
That's going to be. We are preemptively canceling this show because we know Ryan's mind.
Next week there will be no Roswell, because by the time Roswell's taking a week off.
Yeah, Blue Book isn't, but only Roswell.
We'll still be here for Blue Book, and depending on, we might do something else, but we won't commit to it in case we don't do it. But we'll be back for Blue Book for sure.
Yeah, and Roswell's only off just for next week. It comes back the week after.
Yeah.
We don't have to wait too long.
So there will be an episode, but in between episodes, Ryan, where can people find us?
If you want to share my love of ship names on Twitter, you can follow me at The Amazing Rye Guy.
Yeah, and if you want to...
I can't.
If you want to talk about shipping relationships with me, you can go do so by finding where the Titanic sunk and swim down there. But if you actually want to talk about, you know, common sense things, and you want to discuss these shows and the content of these shows rationally and like an adult, or if you want to talk about Marvel or IDW or the Transformers animated series or anything we talked about tonight, or Dune, and who's going to be cast next, or who's going to be hired as the craft service people, because it's going to be somebody famous at this point.
We'll probably get like Bobby Flay or something. Gordon Ramsay.
That's Gordon Ramsay. That's it.
Oh, God, I love Gordon.
Now I'm getting hungry. But anyway, if you want to interact with me, you can do so on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi, or join the Tales from the DC Multiverse podcast Facebook group, and we will add you there, and we can discuss further there. Until next time. Have a wonderful night. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a great week. And most importantly, live long and prosper.